humorous hacks. It's a medical podcast. We're gonna teach you. We're gonna teach you things.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Humorous Hacks this week with our special guest star, Dr. Bridget.
Dr. Bridget's back again. Can't get enough of her.
And we were totally meant to do this episode earlier, but me and Bridge worked at a haunted house together, and we were so bloody scary that we made people cry, we made people have to leave the house, but more importantly, we lost our voice and couldn't be...
I think you're also forgetting the part where we made someone faint and then...
That's actually insane. These guys, they asked me to come do it, and I'm like, I get scared, like, watching... I don't know, pictures of clowns scare me. Like, I can't actually work in a haunted house. Oh, it sounds awful. Oh,
it was so good.
I was at the entrance of the haunted house, and the first thing they saw was me, and people looked at me, and they thought I was fake. Thank you, guys. And then I moved, and they were like, and they turned around and walked out, and I was like, this is a bit awkward because most of the people running this are doctors and medical students.
Oh, so good.
So fun. Anyway, glad our voices are back. Glad you look less scary than you did the other night.
Oh, thank you.
And I could barely look at you. I could barely look at myself.
Okay, so we're here to learn about... What are we learning about today, Dr. Bridge?
I thought we'd go through some critical care-ish sort of stuff.
Maybe. Critical scare?
That was really bad. I was thinking maybe going through some, like, how to interpret ABGs, and then maybe just a really simple approach to shock as well. So
awesome. ABGs and shock.
Scare with shock.
Oh my god, like how shocked they were when we scared them at the...
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. I'm going to keep talking about the haunted house. It was so much fun.
Sarah wasn't there, so let's move on.
Hey, guys.
So approach to ABGs, interpretation of ABGs, it's something that is... very important. I think it often, like, it sort of seems like it's easy when you get it taught to you and you're like, yeah, I get this. And then you go to actually do it and, you know, it can prove to be a bit more difficult, especially because patients don't always follow the textbooks and some parts of their result will come back a bit funny. So that's important to be able to interpret them. So, yeah, shall I just
Let's launch into it.
So,
let's learn some ABGs.
ABGs. ABG. It's easy as 1, 2, 3.
ABG, 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 and license.
Yeah. So what's the first thing you should look at on an arterial blood gas result?
You want to make sure it's definitely an artery and not a vein.
Very good.
Yeah. You want to check it's the right patient. And you want to look at the pH.
Yeah. I, though, would maybe have a look at the oxygen first.
Ooh,
just to make sure that they're not, you know, really hypoxic or, you know, that kind of thing.
You know what? Actually, that's a really good kind of thing because I think, you know, we've kind of just finished med school and one of the biggest things is always doctor's ABC. Just doctor's ABC, doctor's ABC, doctor's ABC. And it's actually really good to just be like, no, actually just always think what are the most important things. I don't know. That was just like a, of course.
What's going to kill the patient first?
And then related to that, you should look at the FiO2, which is the fraction of inspired oxygen, which is the percentage of how much oxygen they're getting in. So room air is 21%.
That's a good little factoid to always have in your brain.
Yeah.
And the amount of oxygen in room air is 21%.
21%. So, and like there are calculations on like life in the fast lane that you guys can go and look up about, you know, calculating if the amount of oxygen is adequate for the amount of FiO2.
Okay.
But that sort of is getting a bit complicated. So let's skip past that and look at the pH.
Okay.
So what are we looking at with the pH?
Between 7.35 to 7.45 is normal. And then if it's less than that, it's acid. And if it's more than that, it's basic. Slash alkalotic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and in terms of your...
chemistry.
Chemistry. So in terms of the words that you use, you describe the pH in terms of acidemia or alkalemia. You don't say acidosis because osis is the process.
And emia.
Emia is the
blood.
Thingia.
Like anemia, not enough blood.
Nice.
Emia relates to blood, yeah.
So less than 7.35 will be acidemia.
Yeah.
More than 7.45 will be alkalemia.
Yeah. Nice. Great. And then you've got to figure out what's driving that pH change. Let's assume that it's abnormal. Because if it's normal, you're going to be like, okay. So what would you look at next?
So I would look at the CO2. So you want to see how much of how much carbon dioxide they have in their blood.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
good.
See if it's high or low. And the reason I always go pH to CO2 is because they both are 35-45.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So 7.35 to 7.45 is the pH, and then the normal CO2 is 35 to 45.
So convenient.
That's great. That's really
Thank
good.
You, medicine.
So if you've got an alkalemia, so the pH is greater than 7.45, and the CO2 is low, you could probably confidently say that that's a respiratory alkalosis, yeah?
Because
that's the process.
CO2 is
acid.
Yep. It's acidic.
Yep.
So I guess CO2 kind of would work the opposite way to the pH. So if CO2 is high, that means it's loss of acid, so the pH would go down.
Yeah, exactly.
But if CO2, there's not much of it, so there's only a little bit of acid, the pH will go up because it's more alkalotic. So CO2 and pH are kind of the opposite ways.
Yeah, exactly. And a handy thing is, like, we do a lot of VBGs in the hospital because they're easier to get.
So venous blood gases.
Yeah, and, like, obviously the SAT, the oxygen level on that is useless. But if the carbon dioxide is normal on the venous blood gas, it'll be normal on the arterial.
Okay.
So that's helpful.
That's super helpful.
If it's high, it's kind of like... But if it's normal, it'll be normal on the arterial. Great. So you can decide if it's a respiratory thing driving this process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what do you look at?
The HCO3.
Which is
bicarb.
Yeah, very good. Bicarb. So if that's high, you know, what would that be?
So the bicarb is like a base.
Yes.
Yeah?
Base.
Keep going. We're going to beatbox under you.
Oh my God, yes.
Bicarb base.
So the base is between 22 to 30. And so if it is more than that, it's super basic. And if it's lower than that, it's really acidotic. So HCO3, bicarb, is the same direction as the pH. Too much HCO3, too much bicarb, too much base.
You got a basic bitch.
Basic bitch.
A pH is high.
It's a high
basic
pH.
Bitch.
And a low HCO3 is acidotic. So essentially your three components is the pH, the CO2, the HCO3. pH gives the guide. Yep. HCO3 is basic. CO2 is acidic.
Now what if you've got an acidemia or, acidemia.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a normal CO2 and you've got a normal bicarb, where else can you look on the blood gas for what might be driving, this might be a bit of a hard question, driving the acid? You guys heard of the base excess?
Heard of the base excess.
If you've got an acidemia, the pH is low, the carbon dioxide and the bicarb are normal, and you're like, what's causing this?
Mm.
Have a look at the base excess. Because that can give you an idea of what else might be going on.
So the base excess is like on that ABG or VBG, it's going to say like BE mm-hmm. and then have like a little number.
Yeah, and I think the normal range is -3 to +3.
-2.
Yeah, so between -2 and +2.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And
so then if it's more than +2, it's alkalotic because there's a big base excess. But if it's less than -2, it's acidotic.
Yeah, so that's a helpful place to look as well.
Cool.
Got it.
So if you have, let's just pick one, like a metabolic acidosis, how would a patient like compensate for that?
Can I rewind back one step first?
Do.
Just for anyone out there who has not even heard of ABGs before, if we're going to just get back to the absolute simple things, what we're looking at this is there's kind of four main scenarios. There's respiratory acidosis, respiratory alkalosis, metabolic acidosis, metabolic alkalosis.
Yeah.
And when you're speaking about a respiratory thing, it's normally to do with the CO2. And when you're thinking about a metabolic thing, it's mostly the HCO3. Yeah?
Yeah.
So the CO2, like up or down, you're looking at resp. HCO3, up or down, you're looking at metabolic. And then there's every combination of that. And then if you're respiratory, acidotic, and alkalotic, it can be compensated by the bicarb.
The direct opposite. Basically.
Yeah. So how I think about this is like, all right, we've got a sick patient. Let's look at their blood. Because if their blood shows that the pH is too high or too low, then we can think, all right, there are two main systems that could cause this. It's causing the sickness. It's either going to be their lungs or it's going to be like, the rest of it, but I always just think it's the kidneys. Like, that's just in my head when someone says metabolic, I'm like, it's the kidneys. It's not so simple as that. So either their lungs are fucking up and that's causing the pH to go wrong, and then their lungs are fucking up and the pH is going wrong, but their kidneys have kicked in to start fixing the pH, or the opposite way around. The kidneys are going wrong, so the pH is messed up. Or the kidneys are going wrong, so the pH is messed up. And so their breathing has changed to compensate for that and try to return the pH back to normal.
And that's sort of where I was going with the next bit, talking about the compensation. Because it will always be in the opposite system and in the opposite direction. So, like I was saying,
I think compensation is in the same direction as the
I mean, like, it's going to be an acidy response to an alkalemic situation.
Ah, yes. Sorry, to clarify what I just said. So, because I may have confused people there. So, if the CO2 has gone up, it means it's more acid. So, the HCO3 to compensate will also go up because the HCO3 is basic. So, they'll both go up, but it actually means they're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Maybe that was more confusing.
I'm worrying that we're confusing our listeners.
It is. It can be confusing when you don't have it written down in front of you. So
this is a tough thing to explain. But I think let's continue. Hit us with it, Bridget.
So in terms of... It's one thing, I guess, to say from the outset about compensation. Well, a few things, actually. If you've got two processes going on, you can see that there's a metabolic acidosis and a respiratory compensation. Mm-hmm. No matter how good that respiratory compensation is, you're never going to get the pH back to normal.
Right.
So if you see a normal pH, you can't be like, oh, well, there's a metabolic acidosis and it's just been fully compensated and that's why it's not, like, no. It will compensate and it will get close to normal, but it will still be on the side of the process in that if it's a metabolic acidosis, there might be some respiratory compensation, but it will still be an acidemic pH.
Got it.
It'll be close to normal maybe, but not quite there. So with compensation, you can't get back to normal.
Good to know.
Right.
Yeah. Even if it's only partial. Okay. Yeah, and then I guess another thing about compensation is if you've got a metabolic, again, I'll just come back to this example, I guess, metabolic acidosis, you're going to be compensating with the respiratory system because it's the opposite system.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, you can compensate with your breathing quite quickly. You can be breathing normally and then suddenly, you know, you can be breathing fast to get rid of all that CO2 and compensate. So respiratory compensation is always much faster.
Because you're blowing off the CO2, and that's so much easier to, like, get rid of CO2, which is acidic, so going to get rid of that, whereas it takes a while for the rest of the systems to kick in to compensate for respiratory.
Yeah, so say your primary problem was a respiratory acidosis, your body would compensate in a metabolic way.
Yeah.
But that takes time. They've got to actually make the stuff. Your kidneys have to, you know, make the bicarb to compensate. So that can be delayed. That can take a few days.
So let's take a moment and go through what these four things are and, like, what commonly causes them. So respiratory, we're talking acidosis and alkalosis. So what could cause respiratory acidosis?
So respiratory acidosis, that's high CO2. Okay. So that the patient is not getting rid of their CO2, which means they're not breathing enough. So they're hypoventilating.
So, like, someone who has pneumonia or pleural effusion, for example, like, there's something wrong with their ventilation?
Yeah.
If I hold my breath real long time.
And we'll just continue the show. So, yeah, so just while Sarah's demonstrating that. Oh, she's still going. That's pretty impressive.
Go on, Sarah.
So just like with any kind of respiratory thing, you think lung or brain, basically. So it's either going to be a problem in the lungs or a problem in the brain and the nerve. Neuromuscular control of the breathing. So the most common cause for hyperventilation that I've seen lately, you know, is opioid overdose and CNS depression.
Mm-hmm.
Still going? Still going. So what about the other way, though? So respiratory alkalosis, so that's low CO2. If we apply the same basic structure, it's either going to be lungs or brain. What have we got? She's still going. What have we got?
Well, okay, acidosis was you're not breathing enough. So is alkalosis... You're breathing too much?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Righto, so...
There we go.
That was pretty good.
I was so impressed.
My swimming's been paying off. That was solid.
Ooh, well done, Sarah.
I feel a little dizzy now from all that CO2.
So I reckon this would be, like, so respiratory alkalosis would be anything that increases your heart rate. So, like, if you're anxious, you're in pain, or, like, sepsis, for example, you're like...
I would reorder that to say sepsis.
That's
pain
fair.
Or anxiety.
So any hyperventilation, blowing off all that CO2.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm kind of doing now.
Yeah, and you can get that with lung stuff as well, but generally it tends to be more of a sort of central process making you breathe fast. And if you remember our previous podcast about how to intern, remember the respirate is like the most important observation. It's the first thing to go off in illness, and it can be a lung or a whole body problem.
I reckon if someone had just said to me like 5 years ago, you know, first or second year, like, respiratory acidosis, they're not breathing enough. Respiratory alkalosis, they're breathing too much. I'd be like, oh yeah. Yeah, cool. That makes sense.
Cool.
Go on.
So I guess then we can move into the opposite end of the spectrum, the metabolic processes.
Yeah, the more complicated, the thorny end.
Yeah, so for metabolic acidosis, or even actually no, taking a step back, for metabolic things, it's either going to be something wrong with what's going in or out.
Uh-huh.
Something wrong with your guts.
Uh-huh.
Something wrong with your kidneys.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And they're the three things. I thought there was four.
There's so what's going in and out, something wrong with your guts, something wrong with your kidneys.
Basically.
Cool.
Basically. So if we look at metabolic acidosis, so low bicarb,
mm-hmm.
If it's a problem with things going in and out, you can talk about unmeasured anions.
Ooh.
What are they?
What are the anions? So
I like to remember it by left total knee replacement. Have you guys heard of that little...
I have.
LTKR?
Yeah. To remember the anions in the blood, the negative things in your blood that aren't measured. What are they?
So anions are all those like little molecules that you think of, like sodium and chloride and potassium and cations, anions. Sorry, I'm getting them wrong. But basically,
anions
I want to
the negative ones.
I want to point out that we only think of this in a metabolic acidosis. So of the four pH issues you can have, only metabolic acidosis are we like, haha, anions. So to figure out the anion gap, you look at your cations, so sodium and potassium,
mm-hmm.
add them together, got those positive babies over there. Mm-hmm. Then you look at your anions, so the negative ones, chloride and HCO3, add those together, because those are negative babies. You get your positive babies minus your negative babies, and you look at the anion gap, which is supposed to be...
Your babies.
Gap between my babies, between the positives and the negatives, should be around 17?
I think it's different with different labs.
Different and different labs. Okay, whatever the normal is.
Like our lab, I think, 16 is the upper limit of normal. So
great.
That sounds about right.
But if that anion gap, so if there's more negatives, then if it's high, a raised anion gap, then we think about left total knee replacement. So yep. LTKR.
Yeah, L stands for...
Lactate.
Lactate. And you can see that on the gas, which is really helpful. So you can see that straight away. Lactate is bad. High lactate is associated with morbidity and mortality, because basically it means your body isn't getting enough perfusion to perform respiration, so it's going down the anaerobic respiration pathway. It's just a sign of badness.
So is lactate just like your tissues are dying and they're just like releasing lactate?
I don't know about dying, but they're struggling.
Yeah, they're struggling.
Struggling tissues, take all my lactate, I can't do this.
Sort yep. of.
Kind of.
That's what I think of, definitely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So L, left.
Left.
T.
T for toxins.
So is that like lots and lots of alcohol?
That's one of them.
Like all shitty mnemonics, there's always a vague one, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like
toxins drugs. Is a little bit vague.
Toxins is like everything.
I don't really think of this clinically. But
okay.
It's just good to have.
It's good if you, like, you just got to rule everything else out.
Then
left total knee. Okay.
Ketones.
Ketones.
So this is like your DKAs. So people are in, like, diabetic ketoacidosis, because
mm-hmm.
it's got the acidosis there, so it's really handy to remember.
Yeah, totally.
So I guess, that's probably the biggest example of when you have a shit ton of ketones.
Yeah, and I guess, I'm trying to think of... I'm sure there are other situations you can get high ketones in, but that would be the main one you're worried about.
Alcoholic ketoacidosis.
Oh, that's right.
Starvation ketoacidosis.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, there must be something to do with, like, you're not eating and...
Mm.
It reminds me of an ad I saw for this, like, diet drink, and it was like, this drink induces ketosis.
Yeah,
and they're talking about it as if it's a good thing.
Oh, my God, they do that all the time in ads. They're like, now you go through the ketotic thing, and so it's like, whoa, mate. Are you guys doctors?
Probably not. But you guys are now.
God.
And then R for renal. So there's something wrong with your kidneys as far as handling your, kidneys make bicarb or put a very big role in making bicarb. So
yeah.
If they're acting up, you're not making as much bicarb.
Yeah.
So when we're lactate, toxins, ketones, and renal... I have renal failure, basically.
Yeah,
but renal badness.
Other thing about renal failure is not only the not making of the bicarb thing, but it's the not filtering of stuff that's a problem as well.
Cool. So those are all causes of a raised anion gap, metabolic acidosis.
Cool. So when we're talking about metabolic acidosis, the raised iron gap is around above 16 or 17. So that's raised anion gap metabolic acidosis. But then you can get a metabolic acidosis with a normal anion gap.
Yeah, and that's when you think of other stuff, like, especially, you know how I said, it's things about in and out, things about your gut, things about kidneys. I've kind of already covered the kidneys, really. So as far as other things that are going in and out, if you've got too much water on board and you're hyponatremic, you're losing cations, and mm-hmm. that's in some sort of weird biochemistry thing can make you acidotic, but I haven't really seen it, to be honest. The other main thing is your guts, and it's everything below the stomach, basically, like diarrhea, essentially. Right.
Yeah, diarrhea.
Diarrhea. Losses below the stomach. So.
So, yeah.
Diarrhea mainly being the thing there.
Pooping out bicarb.
Righto.
Yeah. I also in colostomy patients and stuff when they're not absorbing things. And yeah, anyway, that's a whole other story.
Bridge, can you also get it if you, like, give massive amounts of saline to resus someone really quickly and then you get hyperchloremia and that causes it? Is that a thing?
That's what we heard.
I don't know anything else more about that, but it's on the list.
Okay. Sure. Chuck it on there. Where would you put that? You'd put that in the in and out section. Too much water.
Totally.
Definitely. Yeah. All right. So those are all the metabolic acidoses. What about metabolic alkalosis?
Yeah. So again, like going back to in and out, guts, kidneys. In terms of in and out being really, dehydrated, being low on water can be a problem. I've got written here like high bicarb, and I can't really think of a situation where anyone would be given bicarb unless they needed it to treat their acidosis. So we'll skip past that one. Going to the gut, it's losses above the stomach this time.
Oh my god, because your stomach's acidy.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Sorry. You have a penny you can have on the table and you just drop it.
No, in the penny.
Honestly, the penny has been dropped so many times. And I think I'm making this podcast just for myself to learn things.
Like, you're getting poor just by doing this, but you're making so many realizations.
But my knowledge is the biggest wealth I could ever have.
So you're vomiting out acid and you're pooping out bicarb.
Yeah.
Real quickly, just the other day, when I just finished med school, I was like, I'm no longer a student. And then someone said to me, Karen, we are always students. So I just shut up.
A lifetime of learning.
So true.
I did a course just the other day and it was like the first formal learning that I've done all year. And I was like falling asleep and I was like, how did I do this for every day, all day for 7 years?
All right, go on.
And then as far as metabolic alkalosis, other things, diuretics can affect the kidneys, steroids, low potassium, so it's like a loss of a cation. These are all like random things. Mm-hmm. Have you guys got any good ones to remember? Other causes of metabolic alkalosis?
I've just heard diuretics and vomiting is the super common causes. But something else to think about if someone has, for example, severe anorexia nervosa, they might have like severe potassium depletion as well. And that can do it. But I think diuretics.
How does that work?
Oh, getting into the renal physician-y kind of... bit of
not
this.
Even the renal, like think about potassium, pH, DKA. No. So acid causes potassium to leave cells and go into your tissues. So in a patient who's having, this is a bit of a divergent thing, mm-hmm. but so in a patient with DKA, they're acidemic. And they're hyperkalemic in their blood, but their whole body potassium is actually normal or low.
Okay.
And that's because the high pH, the low pH, the acid, the low pH is causing potassium to leave their cells. Because remember, all your potassium in your body is generally in your cells, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you're alkalemic, the potassium can go the other way. Back into cells. So that's why when you're to go back to DKA, someone who's got a metabolic acidosis and we treat them with insulin and glucose and stuff, we also tend to give them potassium even though they're technically hyperkalemic, because pH shifts move potassium in and out of cells. It's the crux of that. I don't know, does that make sense?
Yes. We did say as interns you're not supposed to lie. I think this is one of those things that's like my brain will make sense of it when it feels ready to.
Acid makes potassium leave your cells.
Yeah.
And then the opposite is true.
Boom. That makes sense.
Boom.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Awesome.
That was a very clinical kind of
Yeah.
It was nice just watching your brain tick over.
Yeah. You can tell that you're a real doctor.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, so there's that. And so you've looked at the gas. You're pretty happy you know what the main process is, what the main osis is.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got to assess for compensation as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just got a few little... I mean, there's a lot of, like, formulas floating around to tell if... you know, if the compensation is adequate or whatever, and they often involve a lot of numbers and they're kind of hard to remember. So I'm going to ignore all of that.
Okay, good.
And just a really easy one, big ones to remember for the metabolic processes.
Yeah.
Because with metabolic processes, you're more likely to see the respiratory compensation earlier in the piece, remember?
Mm. Yeah, totally.
So I guess that's why it's worth learning.
Yeah.
So for a metabolic... alkalose, hang on, which way would it be? I just want to make sure I say the right thing the first time.
Yeah.
Because this is why I think ABGs are confusing, is that people, when they're teaching you, they get things mixed up.
I know, and then you get that.
And you're like, oh, what did they just say?
Generally speaking, when you look at it, I just first look at the pH.
Yeah.
Is it low or high? Cool. Yeah. And then which one matches? Does a CO2 match or does HCO3 match? And then you pick which one it is based on that.
Yeah. So in a metabolic acidosis,
mm-hmm.
where the pH is low.
So pH is low and it's metabolic, so we're dealing with the bicarb.
Which way would you expect the carbon dioxide to go? Because the carbon dioxide is an acid, so what would you expect to do?
Your body would want to get rid of that acid from the lungs.
Yeah.
So you'd be hyperventilating, trying to blow off CO2.
So you would have low CO2.
Yes.
Ah, yeah, that's
what
totally.
You would expect.
That makes sense.
Okay. But how low should it be?
Hello,
can you go?
So if your pH is 7.xy,
yeah,
your CO2 should be XY.
Holy shit! So if your pH is 7.20, yeah, so you're acidotic and you've got really low bicarb, so you're like, it's a metabolic acidosis,
yeah,
and you're like, what's my CO2 going to be? Your CO2 will be 20.
If there's adequate respiratory...
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's
totally. Yeah,
that's
love
a
it.
Sneaky rule. So sneaky, your CO2 compensation is going to end up as whatever those last two digits are after the 7.7.
Yeah.
But once you get down past 7.0 into like the sixes, this rule doesn't apply anymore.
No, not, and you're in big trouble, and you're not going to be able to compensate adequately for that anyway. So.
Isn't below 7 on the way to heaven?
Yeah, a little bit. So that's like an easy one. I did have another easy one for the metabolic alkalosis, but I don't know if I can explain it.
I heard that the CO2 goes up the same kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. That's one. So we want to explain that one fully.
So similar to how you'd be blowing off CO2, when you're in a metabolic alkalosis and your pH is high, you'd want to be retaining your CO2.
Mm-hmm.
So you're breathing less, maybe doing that deep kind of breathing. Meditation. And your CO2 will go up the same way. So if your pH was 7.55, then your CO2 could go up to 55.
And there's heaps of like complicated little formulas and stuff floating around the internet, but I find that it's these really quick, easy ones that are actually helpful on the fly.
Totally. And also, you know, when you're still either a medical student or like, you know, very starting off, if you get the basics and you can figure out, are they, you know, is it acid or basic? Is it metabolic or respiratory? Is there compensation, not compensation? And what are some potential causes?
You're
That's
done.
A damn good start.
Hmm.
And possibly all you need to know at this stage.
Yeah.
And possibly all I know at that stage.
I'm going to add one more thing to the mix.
Yeah.
Which is the AA gradient.
Oh, but we haven't done the respiratory compensations yet. Oh, yeah, that's right. We said they were too hard. Well, basically, it's like the similar vibe. Like, if your CO2 is driving the acidosis, then your bicarb will start to go up to compensate.
And the reason I didn't talk about that is because it generally takes a few days to happen.
Right.
And then alkalosis, same thing. Your bicarb will start to go down. And there's a few rules about the numbers that
you'll see. There's a rule called the 1-2-3-4-5 rule for respiratory acidosis and alkalosis calculations. And it takes into account if it's acute or chronic. But maybe that, I don't know.
It's a bit past the scope of this.
I feel like you needed just a table. You can't just explain it.
Cool. So let's hear that AA gradient. That's something I definitely learned and then purposely forgot because I thought that I don't need that in my brain.
Yeah, and I used to think it was really useless.
Oh my God, I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, so it's, the A is a capital A and then there's a little a gradient. So it's a gradient between the pressure in the alveoli, the partial pressure of oxygen in your lungs, compared to the partial pressure of oxygen in your blood. And by partial pressure, it's just a fancy way of saying concentration.
Okay. Right.
So it's a comparing how much oxygen is in your lungs with how much oxygen is in your blood.
And the big A is your lungs and the little A is your blood.
Yep.
Cool.
And it's important because it should be the same. There should be no gradient.
It should be the same. There should be no gradient.
Yes.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
Go on.
If your lungs are working properly, the amount of oxygen that you breathe in, in and it makes it all the way down into your alveoli, that should get into your blood.
Totes.
Okay. But if it's high, if you've got a big difference between how much oxygen is in your alveoli and there's way less in your blood, then what's causing that? It has to be a diffusion problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful in hypoxia.
Yeah.
Is this patient hypoxic because of a problem with diffusion in their lungs? Have they got a whole bunch of pneumonia there that's impairing the diffusion of oxygen? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a problem with, you know, their something else, like that's not in the lungs? So what would it be, like, you know, you're not ventilating properly, like in terms of a CNS drive, or you might be anemic or something.
That was actually a lot easier than I thought that would be.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot scary.
But I find it useful in ABGs in that if you've got a metabolic process and the respiratory compensation is inadequate, doing this can help you figure out why.
Yeah.
Is it a lung problem or is it their brain?
That's trippy. That's trippy, man. So, for example, if you had, what were you just saying, a metabolic acidosis and the compensation is not sufficient, so if the AA gradient is normal, what are you thinking?
That it's going to be something in the brain, like, you know, CNS drive or chest wall or something.
And if the AA gradient is high,
then there's a problem with diffusion. There's gunk in the lungs. There's fluid in the lungs.
Holy fucking shit. How have I never understood that?
Bridget, I'm so happy you told me this.
Mind blown.
I'm like, whoa. Thank you.
It's actually not that hard to calculate either.
How do you actually
calculate? So, again, this might be a bit easier with writing, so I would advise our listeners to look it up. But basically, the hard part is figuring out the partial pressure or the concentration of oxygen in the alveoli.
Yeah.
Because the partial pressure, concentration of oxygen in your blood, the PaO2, O2, you get that on the blood gas. You have that.
Yeah.
You already have that number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's calculating the other number that's harder. Okay. Mm. Essentially, it takes into account oxygen, how much oxygen is in the air.
Isn't it just, this could be completely wrong because this is from the top of my head. Isn't the PaO2 just meant to be five times what the oxygen delivery is? It's like if the normal room air is 21% with oxygen in it, if I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
I think I heard that. That's like a cheeky.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, I said it right back at the start, this fancy formulas to see if the saturation, the PaO2 in your blood is adequate for the amount of inspired oxygen.
Yeah.
You remember I said way back, like, you know, you look at if it's a venous or an arterial sample and you look at the FiO2.
Yes.
So say it's 50% and the oxygen in the blood is 60.
Yeah.
You'd say, well, that's a normal oxygen level. So it's above 60 is normal, but then not for the amount of air that they're breathing in.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of comes back to that, not so much the AA gradient.
Okay.
But yeah, that's correct.
So it, like, a really cheap way to say the PaO2 should be five times what the expected oxygen delivery is.
Yeah, and that's what's in your blood.
Got it.
I feel like we're saying PA, but it's...
Yeah, it's hard because it's a big A and a little A.
All right. But back to the AA gradient, just really quickly. Again, I'd recommend looking it up. There seems to be really good YouTube videos that go through it as well. It takes into account the amount of oxygen, the pressure of oxygen in the air.
Yeah.
It takes into account other gases that you're breathing in, mainly water vapor and carbon dioxide.
Right.
Okay. At sea level, a lot of this stuff is constant, so you don't even have to really worry about how to get there, right? When are you ever going to be calculating an AA gradient of someone in the Himalayas? Like, you know.
If I'm lucky.
If you're going to go there, learn how to do it, but, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So what it boils down to, if you just skip all the working, skip your working, don't show your working. The partial pressure of oxygen in your alveoli is the FiO2, fraction of inspired oxygen, so that's 0.21 at room air, multiplied by 713. That's the number that takes into account the oxygen and the water and all that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Minus the PCO2, which you get on the gas, mm-hmm. multiplied by 1.25. And that's something you can easily do in your head, like 1.25 multiplied by something, right? Like, yeah. You take the quarter. You take the quarter of it and you just add it onto the...
Okay, good. Got it. That's easy. Yep, got it.
So say it's 40. Yes. What's a quarter of 40?
10.
And then you add it's 50. To 40. It's 50. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's easy. Actually,
isn't that how it's been so long since
I've done that? Yeah. So 713 multiplied by the FiO2 and then you minus from that CO2 times 1.25. Mm-hmm. That gives you your P, big A, O2. And you subtract that from the one in your blood and you get a number.
And that's the AA gradient.
Yeah. And that's like final year level shit.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's all take a big breath. I just, during that, all of that, my first year self was just sitting there listening, being like, oh my God, medicine is so hard. And so let's just take a minute and think, for all those first, second and third years out there, this is some high level shiznit we just talked about.
Yeah.
So if you can get to fifth year and wrap your head around this whole episode, then you're doing well. But it just, take a break. Just listen to our soothing voices because you don't definitely need to understand all of this. It's going to take some time and looking at lots of ADGs asking people to explain them is the best thing to do.
Yeah. So I think really a good kind of conceptual framework to do is as long as you can kind of figure out acid, basic, metabolic, respiratory, what's a compensation and some general causes, get that far and then kind of build on it. Get the basics really down pat. Because, I mean, it's only taken me till, now I've really graduated to really understand the AA gradient and like really piece it all in. So get the basics down first and slowly do it. I think this episode got progressively harder as we go.
Yeah, we don't usually do that. Usually it just disintegrates into mnemonics about dinosaurs and other silly things. But this was like a legit learning because Karen and I just learned things.
I know, that was great learning.
One of the good things to take out of this episode, though, is the left total knee replacement. Keep that in your head because that's
for
always
metabolic acidosis.
One of those things that the consultant asks you. It's like, well, what are the causes of metabolic acidosis? You know, like, meh, left total knee replacement, and they're like, ha, ha, ha.
And then I think, you know, the bowel thing, like, you're acidotic if it's below, losses below the stomach, and you're alkalotic if it's acid.
You vomit out acid, you poop out bicarb. Yeah.
Totally, and like, respiratory acidosis is you're not breathing enough. Respiratory alkalosis is you're breathing too much.
Oh my God, we learned so much! Oh my God. So much!
Man.
Really, we should just have you a permanent member of the show. This is so convenient.
Mind-blowing
bridge.
I'm
sorry that I sort of took that to a place and we kind of got a bit stuck there, but we're back.
No, this happens. Is so good.
It was like a trippy medical learning acid trip. Oh my God.
With a bunch of basic bitches.
Thank you so much. I know you've really given us all the hacks possible under the sun, but do you have another one?
Do you have one on? Yeah,
I might have one.
If not, I might have one. We've all got them up our
sleeves. Go for it, guys. I think I'm hacked out.
Ooh.
I can't hack it anymore.
Well, Sarah just finished med school, which was obviously, you know, pretty damn exciting. And we did it like a cute little thing. We all went around and did a game called like roses, thorns and pickles, which is like roses is a good thing that happened during med school. Thorn is a bad thing that happened. And pickle is a time that you had yourself in a bit of a pickle. The other way is traffic lights. A green light's a good thing, a red light's a bad thing, and an orange light is something a bit creative and different and weird or a pickle. But it was such a beautiful game, and we all sat around with just celebrating in the sunlight, and spoke about like this one good thing that happened in med school. And I think it was really nice to sit and reflect. So I think at any point you're in a med school, it's really nice to just either sit with your friends if you're feeling that way, or find yourself and just think like, what's a really good thing that's happened so far? What's a bad thing and what's like a really kind of odd, strange, funny situation. I found it a really like amazing reflection time and I was like, I wish I did this earlier.
Yeah, like JD and Scrubs, just at the end of the day, sum it all up and be like, this was the hard thing. This was the difficult thing. And this is the reason why I'm doing medicine. Like the nice thing you took out of that day. I think that's a really good point.
And don't stop doing that. Like you got to keep doing that even while you're working.
Totally. That's why you love pickles. Oh,
delicious.
Oh my god.
With some schmear and a bagel. All right, thanks so much, Bridget.
I fully had Like, we've all had salmon cream cheese today.
Everybody, thanks so much for listening. Check us out on the Facebook, Humorous Hacks. We've got a Twitter, at Humorous Hacks. And please send us, we've gotten some great messages lately. Really nice people.
Thank
being
you so much.
Yeah, we love getting these messages. We're like, God, people are actually listening to us. Ooh. I thought I was just talking to thin air. Send us emails at humoroushacks@gmail.com with episode suggestions. Sorry to people who we haven't got to your suggestions yet, but we've definitely got them in the bank and they'll be coming.
Love ya and don't stress.
Don't stress.
Don't stress.
Don't stress.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Don't stress.
Oh, so freaky. Bye.
Humorous Hacks. It's a medical podcast. We're gonna teach you. We're gonna teach you things.